Well, last Sunday, I talked about the mission statement, focused on that in particular, because this is not just nice information. I mean, this is the King telling us what we are to do. And I think for many of us, this issue of submitting to authority is something that we don't really maybe like, because at heart, we are rebellious creatures. I mean, we find it very easy to say no to almost anything and everything because we don't like to be told what to do. And sometimes what we project onto our Christian faith is, oh, God is just some ogre who is forcing me to do things that I don't want to do that are not fun, and I just kind of have to do it or he's going to zap me. And that's a horrible view of what it means to be a Christian. At the same time, we need to understand that there is an authority. There's a weight to the authority that Christ proclaims that he has. All authority has been given to him on heaven and on earth. There's nowhere else. He has all authority. And when he tells us, this is what I call you to do, do we take it seriously? And I shared this last time. The Lutheran commentator, Lenski, he really deals with kind of like the lexical aspect of the text. And I was telling you last week how grammar is important and how the main verb in Matthew 28:19, make disciples, is in the aorist tense, which we don't have in the English, but it's just really the idea that this is something just to be done. It doesn't indicate how it's to be done. It's just that this is what's supposed to happen. Make disciples. Just do it. Our problem is we got a million and one reasons why we don't have time to do it. Or I'll do it later. Or, you know, I just don't even know how this is so important. Well, if we're called to make disciples, and I want to kind of go over this a little bit more this morning, because in thinking about it, one of the things that maybe is part of the problem is we don't even know what it means to be a disciple ourselves. I mean, let's not even talk about making disciples. Are we disciples? Do we really follow Christ? I mean, are you the real deal? If you want to make a disciple and you say, hey, you should become a Christian like me, if someone were to look at you, would they get the real deal idea of what it means to be a Christian? In other words, is your testimony, is your witness such that it's actually attractive that someone would look at your life and say, you know what, I want to be like you. I want to be a Christian like you. Not that you're perfect. Okay, there's no one perfect here. Okay? And for anyone that wants to find fault with Christians for not being perfect, you're totally right. No one's perfect. But is your testimony winsome? You know, is your testimony clear? Can someone say, you know what? I know you're not perfect, but I do see this. I see you love Jesus and that you follow him. I might not agree with everything that you talk about. I might not even like what you're about, but I see that it's clear that you love and follow Jesus. Now, we have to understand, our testimony doesn't save people. But if our testimony is not winsome, if our testimony is not attractive, we could actually be doing a disservice for the sake of Christ. I mean, it's not even about making us disciples. We are actually keeping people from wanting to be disciples. Because sometimes people look at Christians, they're like, you know, if you want me to be like you, I'm already messed up. And I don't need to be more messed up like you to be something what you say is better. So I have to ask you a question. Before we even obey this command to make disciples, are you growing as a disciple of Christ? Now, it's not that we don't have the means to grow. We are given all the means to grow. We've been given His Word. We are given the Holy Spirit. We are given the body of Christ, fellow believers, so that we would help each other grow. But what do you do with it? You know, it's like trying to take someone to the table and say, here's food. But you can't make someone eat who doesn't want to eat. Right? You ever try to feed a little baby? And, you know, like when they start eating solids, and those of you who are parents, you might remember this. Babies love, like, the sweet stuff, right? Like the fruit and all that, but they don't like the vegetables and the meat. So if you're like any other parent, what do? You know, you take the spoon and you put like the meat or the veggie, you put a little bit of the fruit stuff on the front end. Because they'll do this. And they're like, oh, it tastes good. And then they swallow the whole thing. And that's how you get the veggies in, right? So that's how some of you are still alive today. Your parents had to resort to such strategies, okay? But when it comes to spiritual feeding, some of us are kind of like that too. You come here to be fed. So the food is presented, and you might be going something like this. Does it taste good? Ooh, this is like vegetables. Why is Pastor John always going to talk about like hard things? Like he's talking about sin. It makes us feel so bad. Like that's like vegetables. Yeah, I don't know if I want to eat that stuff. Come on, give me some good stuff. Give me some candy. Give me something sweet. Give me something that would make me feel good. And I'm not sure what I'm supposed to say then. Jesus loves you. He wants you happy. He wants you to be rich. Oh, yeah. Give me more of that. I want that one. I want the rich one. He wants me to have a nice life. Now, that might sound okay. I don't know. I said it in a high-pitched voice. But, you know, you just go, I kind of want stuff like that. But is that what it means to follow Jesus? Is Jesus really just kind of like a genie that we kind of rub his belly and then we, you know, say, do what I want you to do so that I feel happy about life, that I feel fulfilled about life? I think sometimes that's really what it comes down to. You know, even for those of us who might say, well, I'm a conservative, evangelical, Bible-believing Christian. But we're closet prosperity gospel people. Because the way we live actually shows that we find a greater value in the kind of life that the world says is a good life. Not necessarily the kind of life that God says is the right life. And so when we are given commands, are you living in present active obedience to these commands? Are you growing in such a way so that you take to heart the things that God calls you to obey? Now, I'm going to have to remind you, I'm not telling you to do these things. This is not the word of John Kim that's being preached. I'm just the messenger. You know, and that's why people, they sometimes associate the messenger with the message, so they stone the messenger. Let's just shut him up, because if he stops talking, we don't have to listen to this anymore. Well, that's happened throughout history. You know, Jesus even talks about that when he says, you who stoned and killed the prophets. Why? Because you didn't want to hear what the prophets had to say. So they just killed them. Well, God's word makes it very clear. We who say that we follow and love Jesus Christ, our lives should reflect that in how we live, so much so that we could confidently, not perfectly, but confidently tell someone, imitate me as I imitate Christ. In 1 Corinthians 11:1, that's what Paul says, be imitators of me just as I also am of Christ. Now, he does not say this arrogantly. Now, some of us might say, well, but he's Paul. Well, remember where he came from. He hated Christ. He persecuted and put to death Christians. You know, I think for the rest of his life, he had to live with the burden and weight of that. You understand? I mean, yes, he wrote half the New Testament. Yes, he went on these missionary journeys. We would say, arguably, he was the greatest Christian who ever lived. But when he says in Philippians, I'm sorry, in 1 Timothy 1, that he is the chief of sinners. He doesn't say that with false humility. He says that bearing the weight that he killed Christians. Can you imagine on his missionary journeys, it must have happened where he would go to a church and he would meet people and people would say, I remember you. He's like, oh, where did we meet? You killed my parents. But it's okay, I forgive you, Paul, because you're a Christian now. Can you imagine hearing something like that? But yet Paul says, imitate me, as I also am of Christ. Why does he say this? He says this because this is the genuine passion of his life. This is what he's living for. And remember, as he is going on his missionary journeys, he's working as a tent maker. That's where we get the whole concept of tent making, that, you know, he didn't want to be a burden to anyone, so he just made a living himself. He made tents so that he could then freely preach the gospel. And so when he goes around preaching and sharing God's truth, you understand, this is not for his own sake. He's not trying to build up. You didn't see him start up the Apostle Paul's ministries, where it was all about him. No, he's just saying, I just want to share the message of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And he went through so much suffering in order to do that. Now, I think part of our problem is, okay, that's nice, that's Apostle Paul, but you got to understand, Pastor John, I'm busy. How many of you are busy? So you're like, it's a trap, it's a trap. Come on, who's busy? Are you busy? No one's busy? Okay, then you got no excuse, okay? Okay? No. I know you're busy. You're just scared right now. But maybe your busyness masks something when it comes to your spiritual life. In Hebrews 6:11 and 12, it says this, and we desire that each one of you show the same diligence so as to realize the full assurance of hope until the end, so that you will not be sluggish, but imitators of those who through faith and patience inherit the promises. Now, what's the writer of Hebrews saying? Saying, you know what? You as a Christian need to live with diligence and not be sluggish. That word sluggish, remember the word sluggard? You hear that word in the book of Proverbs often. Don't be like the sluggard. Like Proverbs 6. 6 says, go to the ant, O sluggard. Observe her ways and be wise, which having no chief officer or ruler prepares her food in the summer and gathers her provision in the harvest. How long will you lie down, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? The idea of sluggish is this idea of being lazy, slothful, negligent. One lexical aid even said stupid. Well, what does that mean? Well, the spiritual sluggard is the one who is not diligent, going about God's business. The spiritual sluggard is the one who does not imitate those who through faith and patience inherit the promises of God. The spiritual sluggard is not the one who is diligent to live out his or her spiritual life. But we're busy. We're busy. College students, are you busy?
Pastor John, I got midterms. You understand? Midterms. My life depends on this midterm. I have to do well. You don't understand, Pastor John. You understand? Okay. I get it. You got a midterm. And then there's finals. Final exams.
You know, typical churches, all the collegians clear out the week before finals. Because
I have to study. You don't understand. There's only so much time that I have to study.
Okay.
Study.
Not saying don't study. I always find it interesting that people say they have to go study. And, you know, I know I kind of maybe hurt my cause in this sense, in terms of social media. Some of you post and condemn yourselves. You do. I got to study. And then you see them like at the beach at 2 in the morning playing. Like, oh, you're studying, you know, nature. I get it. It's good. Now, I did the same in college. I am not condemning you, okay? We would study. We would go to Powell Library to study. I found out that meant you
put your books in the cubicle, and then you go talk. You talk to people. It's okay. I'm not saying this because I want to condemn you. I feel you. Okay, and then those of you at work. Pastor John, you don't understand. I have a deadline coming up in 2 years. I'm really busy. You got to just understand. I mean, my company's reputation rests or falls on whether this happens or not. So, you understand?
I get it.
Pastor John, I'm getting married. You know what it takes to get married? You know how much work there is to be done?
I got to put together the registry list.
That's a lot of work.
I know. I remember. Angela and I went to, I don't know, where was it, honey?
Robinson's May or something like that, or Macy's, I don't know, whatever the big department store was. And we spent several hours picking and choosing what kind of china and cutlery and napkin holders. And I think we got three things from the whole list. And I just remember thinking, that took a lot of time. A lot of time.
Pastor John, you don't understand. Got to buy a house. Some people in the middle of buying a house.
You know how much work it takes to buy a house? Yes. We have bought and sold 6 homes. Angela's actually the one that's pretty good about doing all the paperwork. She actually reads every line. And I'm glad she does. Because I couldn't. But, you understand, I'm busy.
Pastor John, you don't understand? I got kids! Just had a baby!
You know what babies do? They cry all night. I haven't been sleeping for the last 20 years. I mean, it's just been like a week, but you know, it feels like that.
I get it. Okay, and I'm not just trying to make fun of all those things. I'm saying those are realities that everyone has to face. But,
so what do I do with being obedient? You know what's one of the fun things when your kids get older? They will tell you as they get older,
Dad, you don't understand. I'm really busy.
And I'm looking at them going, should I raise up everything that I do? Are we going to compete about who's busier? I mean, is that what it's going to come down to?
No, you can't do that. It's not worth the trouble.
But it's interesting looking at perspective. You know, like when your 5-year-old kid comes out like, Dad,
I'm busy. You understand? I'm organizing my toys. Don't distract me. Dad, I'm busy. I'm going through my Barbie marathon. You don't understand. I can't. I got to concentrate. There's flow to this. You know, there's a meta narrative through all the Barbie storyline. I gotta like, give me space.
Well, all I can tell you is, I mean, this is what it's like when you deal with relationships. But when it comes to spiritual life, isn't it interesting that so many people really are like spiritual sluggards? Here's a real good picture of a sluggard. Proverbs 19:24. The sluggard buries his hand in the dish, but will not even bring it back to his mouth. Okay, so picture this. Try to picture this. You're at the dinner table. You are so lazy. Okay? You are so lame. The food has been set. Okay, mom has made the food. Beautiful presentation. Heaping amounts of food. And here's your bowl. Here's your plate. You put your hand in, you get the food, and you can't even bring it back to your mouth. Because you're like, oh, I'm so tired. I don't think I could put the food in my mouth. And you just your hand's stuck there. You bury your hand in the dish. You don't even bring it back to your mouth. You know, to me, that kind of echoes James 1. You could be a hearer of the word. So some of you are like, ooh, Bible. I love the Bible. It's like, I love food. So heaping amounts are presented to you. It's laid out before you. And you're like, oh, okay. But it's a whole other thing to actually do something about it. Hearing it, it's just like getting the presentation. The table is set. The message has been presented. And you set your hand to the dish and you just let it stay there. Because the spiritual sluggard doesn't even care to eat it.
James 1:22. But prove yourselves doers of the word, and not merely hearers who delude themselves. For if anyone is a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like a man who looks at his natural face in a mirror. For once he has looked at himself and gone away, he has immediately forgotten what kind of person he was. But one who looks intently at the perfect law, the law of liberty, and abides by it, not having become a forgetful hearer, but an effectual doer, this man will be blessed in what he does. So when you go back to the mission statement, to make disciples of Christ, I want to ask you, are you an effectual doer or are you a forgetful hearer? You know, you might say, yeah, I know the mission, make disciples of Christ. Okay, so it got presented to you again. And you're like, I've had this before. It's like getting the same dish. Why do I keep getting the same dish? Well, your hand maybe gets buried in it, but it hasn't come back. And that's an issue of being a spiritual sluggard. Now, part of it is also an issue of maturity. You know, when you're a child, yes, you are still held to be obedient. Okay, so for those of you who are living at home and you're with your parents, and your parents say, you need to brush your teeth. Now, there are a lot of people who don't like to brush their teeth. And the parents are like, brush your teeth for your own good. You know what happens when you don't brush your teeth? A lot of problems. A lot of problems. Wait till you get to my age, they will all manifest themselves. And you will beat yourself over the head. I should have just brushed and flossed. If you need help with that, talk to James Shin. Okay? He can help you out with that. But when you're a child, sometimes you push back on being obedient because you're like, well, I don't feel like it. Well, you know, there are a lot of things we don't feel like doing. I have never felt like taking out the trash. Have any of you, like, you gotten up and you're like, wow! Today I want to take out the trash because it's the most exciting thing to do in my life. I mean, some people are good about this kind of stuff, but is that what you're excited about? So when your parents say, hey, son, take out the trash. Why do I have to take out the trash? Why do I gotta do this? Take out the trash. Okay, I'll do it. I think that's the same kind of attitude a lot of times we have with God. God says, go and make disciples of all the nations. Why? Why do I gotta do it? I don't feel like it. Why are you making me do this stuff? Don't you ever understand? I got to work on my Nintendo skills. God, come on. I mean, that's boring stuff. God, I want to do something more fun. So God might say, so what's fun? Video games. You know, what's one of the sad things? I'll talk about this a little more later. But it's amazing how the screen, okay, so here's a screen. Different size of screens. I have a small, medium, and large here. And one's a timer, one's a clock, one's my notes. Okay, it's almost like our perspective is reduced to this, and that's all we see now. Because this is what makes me happy. Now I'm not saying you can't play games. Okay, I play this one game called Virus War. I'm on level 306 now. I've gotten pretty good, and it's about killing viruses. And I don't know why. I don't know why. Sometimes I'm all stressed out and all like, okay, I just need to play a little game. So I've been learning to play this game. But part of me, I have arthritis. My reactions are not quick enough, so I die fast. So I'm like, I'll be like, ah! Like, there's an emotional reaction. Do you ever get upset? You know, I remember girls when they were playing video games, they'd actually start yelling at the TV. Ah, God, I hate you! As if they would hear you and respond. I think for some of us, we show more excitement and more passion for something that's not even real. And then God says, will you obey me? You know, I think the immaturity for so many people that is revealed in their perspective, it is that they're short-sighted. And they don't take into account that the God who calls you to these commands is a God who loves you and wants you to actually live a life that is truly meaningful and filled with purpose. So that's why as a Christian, it's crucial that you pursue spiritual growth and maturity, or else you will be like the spiritual sluggard who doesn't do anything with what you're handed in terms of spiritual food. You know, that's why we live in an age where there are so many spiritual resources at our disposal. You could listen to the greatest preachers anytime. That's kind of sad for preachers like me, you know? I've actually had people say, hey, Pastor John, I was listening to Pastor John Piper the other day. The best sermon I ever heard in my whole life. Why can't you preach like him? I've actually heard people say that. I'm like, maybe because I'm not John Piper. I'm just John Kim. But you know what? Good. Listen, I'd rather have you listen to John Piper, John MacArthur, Alistair Begg. I mean, all these other wonderful, great preachers that are out, because you have so much resource at your disposal. But even with all that, what do you do with it? It's almost like you're propping up all these messages around you to say, look at all the stuff that I got, but do you actually eat it? Do you actually do something with it? So if you understand what it means to be a disciple of Christ, then the command is make disciples. And as I mentioned last week, are you actually doing that? Are you doing that? Just a simple act. Are you doing it? Are you doing it right now in the present tense? You know, obedience is meant to be done in the present tense. You don't say, I did these things in the past and bank on past obedience to sustain you in the present. And you don't make grand promises that you will do it in the future. Are you presently doing it in the now? When Jesus calls us to be obedient, you do not qualify your obedience. You obey. And you obey now. Now the other thing is, are you present in doing it in the present? In other words, when you talk about the Great Commission, this is to the church. And in order for us to be the church, we need to be here at the church in the sense that we're actually doing it corporately, collectively. You know, there's a reason why we actually physically gather together on a Sunday. It's not random. It's not arbitrary. It's not because of anything. We don't have anything better to do. We are actually called to physically gather. Do not neglect the assembling of yourselves together. Hebrews 10. We are called to encourage one another. And that encouragement comes through your physical presence. Now, some people don't really value physical presence, and our current culture devalues physical presence even more. In the day and age of virtual relationships, we actually depend maybe too much on not being physically engaged with each other. You know, we talk about being socially awkward. I think there's a reason why we have a lot of socially awkward people, because we don't even know how to interact with each other. And not only that, we're scared to interact with each other because you're afraid of what people might think. But it's beyond social awkwardness. It's just social absence. I mean, how much time do you spend absent from being involved in other people's lives? People are now content to stay in their rooms or stick on your ear. You know, your headphones, you're glued to your screen. Even if someone is next to you physically, you don't even talk to them, you text to them. There's no physical engagement. There are no conversations happening. You know, if that's the kind of life that you present, what kind of disciple will you be making? How do you make disciples that way? You know, if you're too busy to invest your life in being a disciple now, you're never going to grow as a disciple. If you're too busy to invest your life in making disciples now, you're never going to make disciples.
You will be busy pursuing your own life for your own fulfillment. And then at the end of your life, when you face God and he asks you, so where are the disciples that you were called to make? Where are they? Can you show me? Whose lives did you invest in? Who's going to step up? Who's going to step up and say, yes, I was one of those lives invested. And at that time, I don't think the excuse of saying, well, God, you understand, I had a midterm. I had a work project. I was buying a home. I was raising a kid. Those do not excuse you from obedience to this command, to this mission. You cannot afford to keep putting it off. You know, I think that's the one thing that I hear a lot. It's like, well, I'll do it when I have time. But I don't have time now. Well, maybe what it really is it's an issue of your priorities. Whose lives are you investing in? Now, I don't want you to reduce church to just showing up to an event. That's not just church. It's this organic relationship that you are investing in. And do you make time to do it? You just can't say, I'll do it later. Because what you're saying by I will do it later is, God, I have more important things than the things you call me to do. I'm going to do that first. And when I have some leftover time, I will then do it. Life is short. Before you know it, you're going to be on the latter end of your life. And we don't even know when their lives are going to end. So if you keep pushing it off, when will you actually get to the being obedient part? The royal edict has come from the mouth of the king. Royal authority has been declared. So to disobey what has been commanded is not just a matter of disregard, it's a matter of rebellion. It's a matter of rejecting authority. That's serious. You're like, Pastor John, why you gotta be so intense about this? I'm not the one saying this. You have to answer, not to me. You have to answer to the king. And when he asks you, were you obedient to me? You don't look around and you can't have someone cover for you. It's just you. Your parents can't cover you. Your teacher can't cover you. Your boss at work can't cover you. No, you have to answer to God. So, you know, we talk about this aorist tense idea. It's, you got to just do it. The concern is, I don't need to hear all these excuses. Just do it. And you're like, but I need to know how. I need to know why. I need to know. Are you doing it? The present tense matters in that you must do it now. The active voice matters in that you as the subject do it. Now, here's the one thing. Another thing about sermons. When we hear a sermon, have you ever thought, someone really needs to hear the sermon? Like someone else needs to hear the sermon. No, the question is, are you doing something about what you hear? When you talk about the imperative mood matters in that it says you must do this. This is not negotiable. This is not optional. This is not just a nice idea. The imperative says it's a command. Will you do it? Because if you don't, it's disobedience. So, this is what I did. I took the Great Commission, and if you will bear with me, I wrote it out in a way that hopefully will make sense in kind of expanding the perspective a bit. Here we go. Because Jesus, as Lord and King, has all authority in heaven and on earth, he has given us this command. Go, and as you are going, make disciples who love and follow me. This is Jesus speaking. Show them that you love and follow me. Share with them the good news of the gospel of who I am and what I have done. And then welcome and celebrate the conversion of sinners as they bear witness through baptism in the triune God. Teach them continually about everything that I've shared with you. All of it. And be faithful and persevering in the process.
because it will be challenging. But always remember, I will be with you every step of the way as you pursue and fulfill this mission that I have given you to the end of your days and to all who follow me to the end of the age. When you hear the Great Commission, I hope you get a sense of what that really means. It is a 24/7, 52, 365, and 366 in leap years. You don't get one day break in leap years. I am called to fulfill this mission. I am supposed to be actively on mission every day of my life. So are you presenting your life to Jesus in doing this? This is why we planted the church here in LA, so that we would fulfill this mission, this mandate. This is why we gather together on Sundays to teach you all that Christ has commanded. This is why we started meeting with the Collegians on Friday night, so that we would disciple you, equip you, so that you can then go to the campus, that you would represent Christ and make disciples. Yes, even at those Christian campuses. They need Jesus too. This is why the singles met last Sunday, so that you would be taught the truth of God's word, so that you would go into the workplace, that you would represent Christ, that you would make disciples. That's why the marriages met two Sundays ago in Agape, so that you would be challenged to continue fulfilling the mission of making disciples. Yes, starting with your home. Start with your spouse, your children. But be a witness in your neighborhood, your workplace. Shine the light of Christ when you take your children to school, as you gather in social settings, as you have opportunity to invest your lives in others, so that they could see what it's like for someone who's married, who loves Christ together and follows Christ together. So they could see what it's like to be a parent that loves Christ and teaches their children to love Christ. You know, there are a lot of people that have never seen that. That's one of the most common things I've heard from people is, my parent, I never really saw Christ in my parents. Even for those who grew up at church. Because it was just like a little Sunday thing. Or maybe you don't know what it's like to be in a place where people take Christ seriously at the workplace. I mean, tomorrow morning when you go back to work, what are you going to do? What kind of conversations are you going to have? Are you going to laugh at the same dirty, you know, perverse conversations and jokes, knowing that those things dishonor Christ? I'm not saying you need to be obnoxious and you need to, you know, slam people for it. But can people see Christ in you? How about when you go to school? Is the only thing someone knows about you at school is that you study hard? That's great that you study hard. But do they see Christ? You see, wherever you go, this is why playing sports is a big thing too. As you play sports, now, I'm actually very competitive. I really am. I like to win. Like, wait till this retreat. We play foosball. You will see as much intensity that a 54-year-old can now exhibit. I don't like to lose. But I'm not going to win at all costs. At the loss of marring the witness for Christ. You see, that's the tragedy of, like, church tournaments. They're like the most satanic, sinful things ever. Has nothing to do with Jesus. They pray at the beginning, God bless this time together. Amen. Ah! You know, and they go at each other. You see elders, pastors, church members, the praise leader who sings sweetly of Jesus. We love Jesus. And then they play, I hate you! And you're like, contradiction. Like, how does this work? And I was talking to Meinhof about this in Germany when they had their conference. They play soccer. Same thing. We just came from a session, we're talking about the love of Christ. And then you come out and play soccer, and you don't see any love at all. So it's worldwide. But the question is, do you show Christ? I mean, think about it. Why do we spend time with the nursery kids? Are they just filler times? Are we just sending people there? Bear with those babies. Okay? As they torture you with their crying and they're moaning and groaning, and then one of you know, you'll get thrown up on once in a while. Just deal with that. No, do you show Christ to them? How about the preschoolers? The elementary kids? The youth? You know, I was reminded, I was at Grace Church this past week, and every time I go to Grace Church, I'm reminded, because I started there when I was in ninth grade. And I remember being there in the buildings with the youth staff. And I look back now and go, man, you know, junior high is a bunch of punks. Because all you do is complain, you know, you fall asleep during the message, and you're just, you don't really care, you just want to have fun. So for all the people who work with youth, thank you. It's a pain in the neck. Because they don't appreciate you. They just mock you, they'll make fun of you. I remember one time I was driving the church van, and some junior high picked his nose and wiped it on my leg while I was driving. And I was like, I want to kill him. Like, how does he do that? How does anyone in their right mind think of doing such a thing at a church thing? You don't do that. No, junior hires do that. But if you have the love of Christ, what are you going to do?
Love is patient. Love is kind.
Really? Are you really going to show that? Are you going to show the love of Christ?
Now, it's not up to us to determine the results. The question is, are we being faithful to invest our lives into people? Showing them what it means to love God, to love people, to be obedient to His Word. Why? Because we love Christ. And that we would bear witness. And even with my own weaknesses, my own struggles, yes, even my own sinfulness, I trust that the grace of God will still use me to be someone who will bear witness that Christ means everything. You know, it's really only by the grace of God that we can be sustained in this venture. It is only by the grace of God that we can be sanctified through this process. It's hard. I mean, one of the things you learn very quickly about being at church with people is that it's complicated. It's messy. You know, you get past Sunday. Sunday's like, hi, how are you? And then when you get to nitty gritty, you sit down, let's have a talk. Yeah, my life's a mess. I got a lot of issues. But what do you do about it? Pastor, fix it. I mean, it's amazing the stuff that comes out. But that's why we're here. That we would show them the love of Christ. This is our mission. To make disciples of Christ. So, will we choose to accept this mission? Not only accept it, but embrace it. You know, I'm hearing the kids screaming even right now. Do you hear that? And then you're thinking like, so I'm supposed to make disciples of Christ as they're screaming? That's kind of hard to do. I mean, I can imagine if you were screaming, like if I was preaching, you're like, the screaming at me? I might after a while get a little discouraged and go like, well, why am I doing this? You know, there's some biblical imagery that I think is useful for us to consider here. Turn to 2 Timothy 2. Verses 3 and 4 says, suffer hardship with me as a good soldier of Christ Jesus. No soldier in active service entangles himself in the affairs of everyday life so that he may please the one who enlisted him as a soldier. Now, some of us don't like this imagery. You're like, I'm not into violence. I'm not into, like, war stuff. But you know what? War is not a respecter of persons. Go to a war zone. What are you going to do? Go up to the war zone area to the enemy and say, time out. I'm not into war. So I'm not a part of this. And they're like, you're part of the enemy. I'm going to kill you right now. I'm like, no, don't kill me. Can we just talk about it? Let's go to Starbucks. Let's grab a latte and can we talk? No, I'm going to kill you because you're the enemy. You see, you don't have the luxury. And I think for some of us, we don't understand how privileged we are. We'd like to talk about everybody else's issues and everyone else's problems when we live this luxurious, comfortable life. And we actually have the nerve to get angry about other people's problems. And then as a Christian, I've got to ask you, how much do you avoid hardship? Discomfort. We can be critical behind our computer screens, writing a blog, get angry in that way,
but what do you actually do to engage in the trenches? You know, I think that's the tragedy of our culture today. It's easy to sound noble, but are you actually suffering hardship? Actual hardship for the sake of Christ. Now, it doesn't mean it's going to be so crazy ugly. Some of it just means, do you sacrifice time for the sake of others? Or are you so busy with your own life, your own pursuits, your own hobbies, your own whatever it is, that you never have time to invest in people? You know, it says here, no soldier in active service entangles himself in the affairs of everyday life. It doesn't mean as soldiers you don't have to deal with the affairs of everyday life, but it says you don't get entangled in it. Why? Because it says, so that he may please the one who enlisted him as a soldier. See, that's what goes back to the authority of Christ. When Christ says, I am your king, I am the one who is commanding you, and I am calling you to do this, do we actually do it so that we would please him? You know, this is why I still learn a lot in my relationship with my dog, Romeo. I do. I really do. You know, as much as sometimes it's hard, this is one thing that I do get. I could be hard on him, but then he still keeps coming back. And like when he does what I ask him to do, like sit. Or when we go out and I say, okay, go pee-pee. Go pee-pee in the grass. And I wonder, does he even know what I'm talking about? Does he just hear, wah, 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 wah? But sometimes it seems like he's actually listening. So I go, good job. Good job. And then we go walk over to where you know, put the little poo in the bag and you put it in the box. So I try to time it where we go there so he poos there. And then I put it so I don't have to carry it that far. And there are times where he actually does it. He goes, I go, poo poo. And he goes and he does this little weird awkward thing that he does to go poo. He goes, I wrap it up, put it in the box. And I go, and he starts walking. And I go, roam. And he turns around. Good job. And it makes a difference. He's happier. And you know why? Because he pleased his master. No, it's weird, right? Those of you who have dogs, there's something weird about that. Now, it's not that that obedience continues. That's a reflection of me too, right? Things could be all good with God for a moment. And you're like, wow, I'm kind of happy. I pleased God. I actually did what I was supposed to do. And how long did that last? Like 10 minutes. And then I was disobedient again. Well, that's the process of sanctification and spiritual growth. Am I going to keep growing in that way? But I can't afford to let the everyday affairs of life entangle me. Are you a good soldier of Jesus Christ? Are you on mission? And are you living in the present tense in fulfilling this mission? Well, I wanted to get to the vision at least today, but I'm not going to. But what I will do is this. Take a moment and just focus on the fact that you're seeing. Okay? What do you see? What do you see? You see something. We are supposed to fix our eyes on Christ, right? Hebrews 4. Fixing our eyes on Christ. Setting aside the things that would entangle us. Setting aside the sin, fixing our eyes on Christ, following Christ, seeking first his kingdom. So here's the thought I want to leave you with. So what's distracting you from that? What is keeping you from being fixed? You know, if I look at that exit sign, I'm thinking right now, I'm going to go out that exit sign because it says exit. I'm ready to go. I'm hungry. I want to get lunch. Pastor John, finish already. And as I'm heading there, someone says, hi. And I go, oh. And then I take another two steps. Hi. Now, it might be good people. It might be bad people. But someone's distracting me from getting out. If we are supposed to fix our eyes on Jesus, I think we need to really be honest and say, you know, so what's distracting me? And what's distracting me from the big picture? In fact, there's so many things distracting us. It's no surprise that we don't value
the big picture of God's kingdom plan. We get distracted by these little things. Think about that this week. And I think especially this topic on the retreat, time, work, and rest, is going to be so practically relevant to that. I ask you to bow your heads as we close and go to communion. I really hope and pray that you understand how important this mission is. It's not good enough just to talk about it. And it's not good enough just to say, yeah, that's part of our MVP. Am I an effectual doer? Or am I forgetful here? Am I going to, in the present tense, do what I'm called to do? Each of you, if you call yourself a Christian, you are called to do it. And we as a church are collectively called to do this. If you are not a Christian, you're not even on the mission yet. You need to know the one who gives the command. You need to submit your life to Christ. You see, if you're not on mission for Christ, you're on mission for someone else. You're living for a life purpose that goes contrary to everything that Christ represents. And that is a life that leads to destruction. Just look at the world around you. It's a world headed fast to destruction. You need a different master. One who actually addresses the issue of your sin. Because he is the one who died and rose again to save us from sin. And to call us to live a life. To give us a mission and purpose for life. That we would live for the glory of the one who created us. There's no greater mission. We are reminded every time we take communion, Jesus says, do this remembering me. And this is why it's precious. It's to remember him. We're not just doing this for the sake of a ritual. We're not just doing this so that we can say we did it. It's actually for us to take a moment, sometimes in the midst of the busyness of our lives and all the distractions, and be reminded. Don't forget what life is about. You are on your way to hell. And Jesus came to save us. Don't ever forget it. We'll sing a song.